The boys of Monty Python loved fancy outfits, ridiculous accents, playing women exclusively by using falsetto, and stooping and lambasting Christianity. With one film, they could do all of this at once. Actually, all of their films did all of that at once, but this was one of them. Monty Python's Life of Brian was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with two lawyers who wonder why they didn't get promoted over this screaming madman. It's Camila Adams.
Object!
And Robin Hitchcock.
I'll allow it.
Liar, Liar was last time. 77 and two-thirds. That's pretty high up. That's in like the top quarter of our stuff. I looked for some statistical anomaly and couldn't find one. It's just a pretty good movie and we liked it.
Yeah.
And it kind of still carried over to, like, I think for the rest of that week, I was using GIFs from Liar, Liar. To communicate with my sister. And she's like, what is this movie? I've never seen it.
Did she watch it though?
No.
It's very available. It's got to be. Where did we watch it? It was streaming somewhere.
I paid $4 for it, and it was worth it.
Yeah. I don't regret the $4.
No.
Like, yes, here, Jim.
I got $4 worth of entertainment
James,
out of that.
Have my $4.
Add it to the Criterion Collection so we can get like a very detailed retrospective. Now, when he throws his face into the wall, what was really happening was he threw his face into the wall. So now, Monty Python's Life of Brian. This is as fresh as you can get, although we wouldn't count it on the bingo card as new to all of us. As Robin, you said you had seen it very young.
I don't know if I've ever seen the whole thing all the way through. Like, I'll leave it up to Camila's judgment. Like,
is this your first time, Sean?
No, but I had to be 13 or 14. I mean, I remember it clearly because it was like a sleepover, and this movie was naughty and it had lots of swears and nudity, and so it was like a, you know, we're teenagers and we're seeing the, you know. So I definitely saw it. But if you saw something when you're 13, you basically haven't seen
right.
it. Yeah.
I agree.
And you had never seen it nor anything else from these gentlemen.
No.
So what's your take?
Like the same, I guess he falls under the same camp as Mel Brooks for me. That's just not not exactly the same camp, but still it's like that slapsticky business. And I mean, it was, what, 79?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And British, and you know, but it's just, it was painful for me.
Had a rough time.
It was just like just so many bits went on for so long. Like the whole, them coming in and out of the dude's house when they're searching for it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, okay, guys, I get it. I'm fine. And then the falsetto.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. Oh, I God. Hate it so much. I put this movie on Sunday. Sunday, I was like, I'm not doing any work today. Today, like, I need to do the laundry. I need to do the dishes, but I won't. Right? And then I put on this movie, and a few minutes in, I'm like, this feels like work.
I was like, wow, I should probably do those dishes.
Yeah. So I'm going to turn it off and watch it tomorrow after work. I still didn't like watching it. I feel bad about how much I don't like Monty Python, though, because, like,
apparently you're not alone in this room.
Good. Yeah. I just know so many people, you know, working in comedy who revere them. And I do. Here's the thing. Like, you know, I started as a sketch writer, and that was the first class I taught at Arcade here in the U.S. There are Monty Python sketches or proto Monty Python sketches that are like textbook. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I would use them to be like, here's heightening, right? Mm-hmm. Like with Four Yorkshiremen, right? Or like, you know, here's a simple premise with Cheese Shop. But although I actually rewatched Cheese Shop, at one point during the movie, I paused it. I was like, I need to like get some goodwill built up. So I'm like, I'm going to go watch Silly Walks at Cheese Shop.
Right.
And then I was watching Cheese Shop. I'm like, there's a lot of extra stuff in here. Like they could trim the fat on this one.
What is Cheese Shop?
The joke is that a guy goes to a cheese shop and asks for a kind of cheese, and they're like, I'm sorry, we don't have that one. And then he asks for 70 other kinds of cheese and they don't have any of them.
Okay.
That's the joke. So
you had to see it 40 years ago when there wasn't many other things to see.
Well, it was like either watch that or watch your cousin milk a cow.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, long-winded way of saying I respect Monty Python much more than I enjoy it, but then also, like, my supervillain origin story is men playing women in comedy. And God, they're the worst at it. They make Kids in the Hall look like the greatest feminists on the planet Earth.
I hope this is just a cultural thing, because this is a Family Guy joke, right? Where they cut away to two proper British men saying, you know what's very funny? A man in woman's clothing. Like, that's just... British people just love that
and
shit.
Like, I mean,
it's okay.
I think it has like a rich historical roots situation. Like, I think
it's to do with Shakespeare.
Like, I seriously think that it's like derived from Shakespeare, and then they have those like pantomime shows.
Yeah.
All of this stuff I only kind of understand. And all of it just makes me grateful to the founders for signing that Declaration of Independence and getting us out of that mess.
I'll be the one who likes this because I'm the boy. But I'm not, you know, I'm not coming here to be like, this is the best comedy ever made. I'm coming here to be like, so I definitely liked it more when I was 13,
but
I had an okay time.
Listen, there are bits that work. I laughed out loud a few times.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, I feel like I end up seeing Holy Grail every 3 years, whether I'm trying to or not. It just happens. And I've kind of gone, you know, I'm on a roller coaster with that, where every other time I'm like, is this actually that funny? And then I'm like, no, it's pretty funny. Is it though? Yeah. I think you're right. The best stuff is the sketches. But even then, I'm not like, there's much older comedy I put on that makes me much happier than Monty Python makes me.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, this is very interesting. It's the only thing like this. Occasionally, it's very funny. Occasionally, they do something that's great. And occasionally they do something that I'm like, I see what you were going for. I'm not necessarily mad at it, but I don't, you know, it's.
Yeah, I was probably a little prejudiced when I started it because of the summary behind it. I was afraid that it was going to be like mad blasphemous.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I mean, and I fast forwarded a lot, but I didn't. Nothing stood out to me that I.
It is a pro Jesus movie,
right?
This is somewhere in the Wikipedia. They're saying we are not blasphemous; we're heretical. If you're heretical, you're attacking the church, which is fine. We're not being blasphemous. Yeah,
right. Yeah. And when I was seeing, I was like, oh, this is just more like, you know, oh, okay, it's just the story of a guy that, you know, what if a guy happened to, like, you know, be born at the same time, blah blah blah, living in his shadow, kind of thing. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Also, so one other thing about not appreciating this is I think that similar to when we watched Blazing Saddles and we were like, they are also spoofing specific things about Westerns that we're not familiar with. Mm. I think that they were spoofing specific things about Bible movies, like the Ten Commandments.
Roman epics and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm also not, like, you know, I did watch Ben-Hur a few months ago, but, like, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That was, like, a whole genre, like, and only, like, the big ones ever made it to me, and only kind of. And then additionally, the, like, the political satire about, like, the warring factions, I am sure that is rooted in, like, 70s stuff that I don't understand. And so I was like, okay, I get it, but it, like, really... Like,
there's a lot of it.
Really hit that hard.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
Well, have you not seen Life of Brian?
Oh, God.
Here to tell you in incredible detail.
Nope. I'm doing this one XTEM.
With a lot of specificity. Is Robin Hitchcock with a 60-second recap. And go.
Okay, so there's this guy, Brian, and he's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
Mm-hmm.
And but he was born on the same day as Jesus, a few doors down from Jesus. And it follows him to when he meets this woman, Judith, and he wants to impress her. And so he, like, joins a anti-Roman Judea liberation front. Or they have...
Yeah, sure.
Right? He overhears Jesus give the Sermon on the Mount and then kind of repeats it, but with a lot of pushback and things get garbled. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, this dude's the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
And some aliens show up at one point, and then he gets caught and gets crucified and sings Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. Everybody does.
Yes.
Okay.
Great. 45 seconds. Much of it was in there.
Yeah. The middle part is by far the part where this movie, I'm like, really? People watch this and we're like, best comedy ever.
Well, British people did. If you're listening in England, thank you so much. Maybe come back next time. It's, you know, they get all this business with Pilate, and they're going to kidnap his wife, but then there's other factions, and then he gets arrested for this, but he's not, he's on trial for that, and it's like, either make the plot streamlined, or just throw in more sketches and forget the plot.
Right, yeah.
But one or the other.
Right, the parts that work, like, I think my favorite scene in the whole movie is Brian's sermon, right, with just the pushback that he gets when, like, the guy refuses to accept the gourd. He's like, I would like to buy your gourd. He's like, you could just have it. He's like, I will give you 2 units of currency. You can have that. Like, to me, that those little self-contained scenes are all that work.
Yeah, and a lot of them work very well.
Yeah, that's a good way to put them. Self-contained mm-hmm. scenes, because there were a couple of those that I was like, okay, this just seems like a multitude of those, and that I can probably hang my hat on. Like, the one that sticks out to me is when he's telling a parable and he doesn't know anybody's name, and they're like, you don't know their names, and I thought. And, you know, actually comparing that, you know, thinking about actual parables mm-hmm. and all right. and the teaching and stuff, I'm like, okay, that's pretty funny.
Because right. no one stops to ask Jesus,
right, yeah.
where did you hear this story? Right, who yeah. was this?
Who's
the
guy?
Master and the thing? Like, did someone tell you?
Were you there? Did you see it? Or
so it's just me that thinks that Biggest Dickus stands head and shoulders over the rest of the movie?
Well, I was never a 13-year-old boy.
That's true, but listen. It's well written. It's the only collision of we wrote it well, but it's still mostly about making the other actors crack up as they try uncontrollably.
All right. I also like the I am Brian part, or I am Spartacus part, right? Like, that's A, like the only reference to a specific parody thing that I get. Mm-hmm. And B, I'm Brian and my wife is too. Very funny.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
just, there are good bits. This whole movie, though, I can't believe it's, like, revered. Like, I'm just shocked.
It really is.
And, like, I recently rewatched Airplane, which I would normally be like, a lot of good bits.
No, like, Airplane hangs.
It does. Yeah. It really does. Yeah. And, like, I don't know. Man, is it like a block because we're American and young?
A little bit.
It might be because, like, there's a lot of, as you were saying, there's a lot of date mm-hmm. specific and cultural specific jokes in there.
Right.
Like a lot of this shit that we're talking about, it's like I was 3 when this movie came out. So like I don't know like what the fuck was going on in the 70s and like neither one of you were born. And so like but like Airplane, there's a lot of stuff still there. It's not like necessarily like year specific.
Right. Also Airplane, like I only ever saw Airport this year, right? Like the movies that Airplane I mean, watching Airport, I forgot that Airplane was like a parody of it. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Exactly.
No idea.
Right? You sure don't need to know. Airport is awesome, by the way. You should watch it. It's a great movie.
Well, Life of Brian.
It was banned in a lot of places.
It was.
Why? Is it just the
air of blasphemy?
Like, exactly. For me, like me. Like if I was in charge at that point in time of a movie theater without having sight unseen on this film, ban it. No.
Just like a little sniff, sniff. This doesn't
feel right.
Yeah.
Let's walk away.
It was banned in several countries, including Ireland, Italy, and Norway. You know, the countries with a lot of churches. Each ban was immediately used for marketing the film. The Swedish posters read, so funny, it was banned in Norway.
I love that. That's adorable.
Right, way to lean into it, guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think they were thrilled every time.
I assume Sweden treats Norway the way that we treat Ohio poorly.
Or that America treats Canada. It was out here first, actually. It was released in the U.S. on August 17th of 1979, about 6 weeks earlier than the U.K., but very limited at first, 5 theaters on that first weekend. It hit number 1 the weekend of September 26th. earned at least $1.2 million that weekend. There's some screwy numbers. It was either a one-week or a two-week winner. There's some uncertainty about the returns for When a Stranger Calls, which is on our list.
Okay.
I just bought that on Blu-ray, and very excited.
Is the call coming from inside the house?
It's one of the ones where the call is coming from inside the house. There was a bunch around that time. It's the one with Carol Kane as the person.
Cool. Yeah.
Made about $19.3 million in the U.S. It was the top grossing British movie of the year in America, not in England. It did fine. There are not detailed yearly charts in the 70s. This wouldn't have been close. The top grossing film of the year was Kramer versus Kramer at $106 million. What a different time.
I know, right? Can you imagine a movie for grown-ups about divorce?
Yeah. Just these two people are going through it. Number one movie of the year. 10th place even was The Muppet Movie at $65 million. So this would have done fine, but not been like a big hit. As I half remembered last week, the financing was handled at the last minute by George Harrison, who formed a production company, Handmade Films, mainly to get Life of Brian made. He mortgaged his house and put up $3 million.
Wow.
Why did George Harrison not just have $3 million sitting around?
Yeah, in 1979.
Right? Like, shouldn't he just have a pile of money?
Yeah, just like, hold on. And he's just like...
I can't believe he needs to mortgage his house to finance a movie.
Royalties were different then. Okay. I don't know.
It just doesn't feel right.
It does not feel right. He should have just been sitting on that cash.
I mean, he was the one where someone broke in and stabbed him.
What?
Remember? So,
oh
like,
God.
I guess he didn't have, like, an estate. I don't know why one of them doesn't have the same money as the other, but clearly Paul has more money lying around.
Well,
writing credits and...
Yeah. Also, like, Wings probably had the most, most Beatles hits.
I mean, how much money did, like, concert tickets were 50 cents?
Right, exactly.
Maybe
had to buy the record, right?
That's true.
They weren't getting screwed over by streaming.
Those Beatles sold some albums, but who knows how George Martin probably got a lot of that. Anyway, George Harrison paid for this movie. That production company hung around, and George Harrison was still involved throughout the 80s.
Ooh, what?
Time Bandits was one of theirs. The Burning was one of theirs. Mona Lisa, With Nail and I.
I love With Nail and I.
Yeah, that had Harrison money too. It was sold and kind of bounced around just as a thing that people owned throughout the 90s, finally dissolved like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
The last Handmade Films movie was 127 Hours, where he cuts his hand off.
Oh, that's adorable.
Mona
Lisa is another great movie.
I have heard that.
And Bob Hoskins was Oscar nominated for it, which is why I saw it, but it's a Neil Jordan movie. It's very good.
Gotcha.
There are four real Monty Python movies, and now for something completely different is from 1971. That is just refilmed sketches. I have not seen that one.
I don't think I've seen it either.
That's just some of their hits, I guess, without an audience. I don't know. Sorry, Python heads. Pythons. Holy Grail was 1975. That made some money, but was not a big hit, not a number one movie in America. Life of Brian and Meaning of Life in 1983, which made about $15 million in the U.S., but is also not a number one movie in America. This is the only one on our list, so congratulations, Camila. You're done.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That was close.
I feel like you just cursed us to them making a Spamalot movie.
I'm surprised they haven't.
Yeah.
Which, sidebar about this movie, you said this came out August 17th, 1979?
Yeah.
We picked it August 16th was the day we picked
it. Happy 43rd birthday.
Yeah.
This movie. we talked about the blasphemy, we talked about the bands, it was challenged in one town in Germany, wouldn't show it as recently as 2016. This kind of went on and on and on. It was repeatedly proven that most councils, like city councils and stuff, that wouldn't allow it to be shown, had not watched the film, because obviously, what are you gonna... The film was briefly re-released in April 2004 to, as Terry Jones put it, cash in on the success of Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. Just counter-programming.
Well played.
Yeah.
Made another $650,000 there. Various polls and surveys have named this the best comedy ever. They're all British. They're all, every single one, like this British film magazine, this, you know, BFI, that say, yep, best comedy ever.
Yeah, they eat a pile of beans at breakfast.
It's like, how do you want to start your day like
right.
that?
British listeners, we love you. You may or may not exist, but we don't.
If you do, tweet us. I'm interested.
I feel like, as you said, sketch writing, I'm sure it could be tightened up. There's a lot of good sketch writing here. There's a lot of, you know, as good as the best SNL stuff, sketch writing in Monty Python. Is it that so much British comedy is proper and stiff upper lip and dry, and these are the guys that will walk funny and do voices, so it's the funniest thing ever? If
I
you're
think a lot of British comedy is really goofy.
But was it before 1970?
I mean, I'm not a historian, but yes. Yeah. I mean, like, they have influences, right? And also, like, they were all doing comedy with them, with subsets of them and other people. Like, Four Yorkshiremen was from a different TV show that two of them were involved in. Mm. So there's definitely roots for them, and I think that maybe they just became the biggest, you know?
Yeah.
My understanding, again, this... I want to be like, I'm not an expert, but like, it's my job. I should be an expert.
This is pretty ancillary to your job.
Their like real innovation was that they refused to end sketches, right? Like that they were, which is Cheese Shop does have an end, and it's a bad one, right? Mm-hmm. So like they would just be like, and the foot falls down, right? And now for something completely different. And that has followed through to American sketch comedy and Canadian sketch comedy in a great way. It was sort of enhanced. Like, I prefer the way, like, Mr. Show does it, where they, like, elegantly segue as opposed to just, like, smash cut into something new.
Right.
But I think that that is probably the greatest gift to comedy that Monty Python did was... alleviate the pressure of a punchline.
That's true.
Yeah.
There often isn't one.
Yeah.
It's often just something vaguely amusing is happening, and it keeps happening for a while. Finally, maybe the biggest legacy of this film, you know, now that fewer people call it the funniest movie ever made, the biggest legacy is probably Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. The closing number for this song, remarkably popular in England, peaked at number 3 at some point, but more than that, has just become a, you know, feel good.
I certainly knew funeral that song and didn't even know that it was from this movie.
Yeah.
I learned it was from this movie when Arcade put on a show called Britspur, or no, there was a festival, Britspur.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
still
we did,
a thing.
Is it still a thing?
I think it's going right now.
Okay.
Or soon, as you hear this.
So, okay. Britspur is a thing that happens in Pittsburgh where British Pittsburghers celebrate their Britishness.
Yep.
And Arcade did a show where we put on a lot of British sketches. Like Frankly Scarlet did a scene from an AbFab episode and so on and so forth. And we ended it by having the full cast sing this song.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I learned that this song was from this movie, which again leads me to think I probably never really saw this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, or you stop
or
paying attention.
Because
the movie kind of falls apart.
But like, so, I have definitely seen parts of it before. Yeah. It's one of those.
It's become a iconic thing that British people sing when things are bad, but they're trying to be slightly ironic about it. At various points when ships were struck with missiles during the Falklands War and the sailors had to stand around hoping they got rescued in time, they passed the time by singing Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. When Graham Chapman died, the rest of the Pythons sang at his funeral. It is now the most popular song at funerals in the United Kingdom. So
that's nice.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that's nice.
Nice to have things.
It's nice to have things. I liked that this wasn't directed by Terry Gilliam.
Me too. As far as I know, Terry Jones never almost killed Sarah Polley.
What?
Terry Gilliam almost killed Sarah Polley on the set.
What?
How?
What happened? With a poorly designed stunt.
Okay.
Oh, yes. God.
Well, we were talking off air about Twilight Zone, so you know, it was the style in the '80s.
Apparently, that's what they did.
Right.
Maybe one day the genius of Terry Gilliam will hit me. I haven't tried to rewatch Brazil in 10 years.
Neither have I.
Mary Beth did recently and liked it. Time Bandits is...
I don't think I've ever seen Time Bandits or Baron Munchausen.
I haven't seen Baron Munchausen. I was bewildered by his Brothers Grimm with Heath Ledger, which might be the last thing.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that either.
My general reaction to him is, this is very interesting. It looks very interesting. Notice I didn't say good, but very interesting. And I'm sure that you're thinking very hard about what's going on here.
I love 12 Monkeys. I think 12 Monkeys is a great movie that works better than it deserves to, which usually makes me think good director.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw The Fisher King in college, I loved it. I recently put it on and noped out of it so fast.
Okay. I mean, I just was
like, not today, Sam.
Yeah, I saw 12 Monkeys. My same, what you just said about, you know, something interesting is happening here. That's my feelings about 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
And I saw Fear and Loathing.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Sure.
Similar. I think
in the theater.
Nice. I feel like that's the same. Like, Fear and Loathing in Brazil, I'm like, I respect what you're doing, right, but I'm not into it. I don't really care about this. Right.
I don't get how people watch any of these over and over again. Because
I've seen 12 Monkeys a bunch of times.
Maybe 12 Monkeys. But, I mean, even oddly, Meaning of Life is probably the one that I've seen the most, solely because I had a VHS of it when I was a teenager.
Ah.
And that's the one where he was kind of off doing his own thing by then. So there's the segment. Have you seen Meaning of Life?
I don't know.
There's almost a short at the beginning of Meaning of Life. That's his part. And it's about old insurance salesmen becoming pirates. But his stuff always is like vaguely depressing,
yeah,
and everything is dirty and everything is weird and everyone looks creepy. So when people are like, oh, Fear and Loathing, my favorite movie, and I'm like, but really? But like, and The Shining is my favorite movie. I don't need a good time, but there's just something off-putting about his whole style, which works really well when he's doing a weird animation that's meant to be weird, but
I mean, his weird animations are like my favorite part of this Life of Brian is the opening credits.
Yeah.
Like, I really, really like his animation.
Could that have been the first James Bond parody theme song?
I highly doubt it, but it is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. We found somehow, you know how there's 78, you know, movies where Vincent Price plays something spooky in the old times. We randomly put on Cry of the Banshee, which is where Susie and the Banshees got their name.
Oh.
And it starts and we're like, what's this dramatic animation? It's one of the like three other things that also have a normal Terry Gilliam animation right at the beginning. And then we put on a different movie because that movie is just a constant string of women being abused. It's one of those where it's like, you're a witch. No, you're a witch. No, you're a witch. Why don't you tell us who the witch is? And that's always expressed through
violence
and ripping of the bodice and such. Mm. But Mary Beth was like, can we put on a different one? Yes, I am. We had gone far enough that I was like, I'll watch the rest after you get to bed. I'm completionist. But what does this have to do? Very, very little. So I like that it was directed by Terry Jones, who knows how to at least have some kind of a through line. I'm happiest when they're doing a tiny joke, you know, when they're doing like, there's not one of us here who wouldn't lay down his life. I wouldn't. Okay, there's one. There's one of us here. That's my favorite jokes that they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
When it's just a tiny little thing. But overall, I'm like, good. You get a passing grade today.
I do find it interesting when the guy is talking about that he wants to fight for his right to have babies.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got like this transgender thing going on.
I got real, real nervous because why is that scene in the movie?
Right.
And then also like John Cleese is like a proud transphobe. So like it was Eric Idle though who wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
It was Loretta. Right.
Mm-hmm. But then they keep calling him Loretta.
I was going to say, like, I think detached from, like, if I saw this knowing nothing about these people, I would be like, wow, it's a little progressive.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Cleese
is a proud transphobe?
Oh, yeah.
He's one of those J.K. Rowling types?
Yeah. He's in those movies.
What movies?
The Harry Potter movies.
Oh, well, yes, the Harry Potter movies.
He's in those movies.
I thought you meant there was a secret section of movies where British people explain why they're transphobic. We're really taking it to the Brits today.
Yeah, those movies are called the Harry Potter movies.
Okay, so John Cleese in real life is the transphobe.
Yeah.
He has nothing. There was nothing about that in this movie because, as I said, I have fast forwarded some things.
As far as I definitely lost interest and stared into my kitten Sprinkles' eyes.
Yeah.
So I might have missed a transphobic punchline there, but for the most part, it was just like...
Yeah, I mean, I found it interesting. Yeah. And that had my attention. I was like, okay, where are we going with this? What's happening? And then they just kind of ended it. And it's like, so, okay.
There are so many moments where I'm like, you didn't go over the edge. Okay. Right. You kind of went. It's never the easy joke. Right. I don't think it's ever really punching down. I'm sure there are 10 exceptions to that that I just didn't note. But for the most part, they're like, they like to wade into the controversial waters and then just be silly there.
They make fun of the guy for having the speech impediment.
Yeah, that felt cheap. But
And also, they make some big nose jokes about Jewish people.
That kind of goes on a lot through that. That's a few times in there.
Which, like... It's okay. We could take it. I'm not actually Jewish.
But I've had Jewish in me.
I'm not
sure. Yes.
I'm not sure. Just letting that one sit as long as I can. I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, even that, though, I'm like, when you break down the comedy of this scene, it's that the phrase big nose sounds funny when you repeat it a lot. Yeah. That's the actual joke. You know, I mean, this is one of those where I would not deny if someone came up to me and said, I'm offended, I would say, okay. And if someone came up to me and said, this is not offensive, I would say, okay. Like, I don't really have a stake.
I was talking yesterday to my students, including Mary Beth, about don't make fun of Florida, it's cheap, right? And I was like, maybe I only feel this way because I'm from New Jersey, right? Yeah. But as much as I'm like, don't make fun of Florida, don't make fun of New Jersey, it's not actually offensive to do it.
No.
Does that make sense?
Right.
So like, that's how I feel about jokes like Big Nose. Like, it's rooted in actual hatred, but it's not really expressing hatred. And it's just kind of cheap. Yeah. Why do it?
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yep.
Still think Biggest Dickus is funny.
Well, where do you land?
I don't know. Let's play the trailer while I think about it.
Okay.
Everyone knows the glorious story of the child born in a faraway manger. Well, this isn't that story. This is Monty Python's all-new Life of Brian.
They call Brian.
He was born into the golden age of Roman rule. It was a time of miracles.
I was blind, now I can see.
Ah! Friendly persuasion and gracious invaders. But there was just one thing on everyone's mind.
Sex, that's all they think about
it. Oh dear.
In those days, getting stoned wasn't against the law. It was the law. And things looked bad.
The Romans.
For the people of Jerusalem.
Still a few crosses left.
Until Brian dropped in. He was a born leader, a potential martyr.
What would they do to me? Oh, you'll probably get away with crucifixion.
Crucifixion?
Yeah.
First offense.
And his mother's joy.
You mean telling them?
They think I'm the Messiah, Mum.
The Messiah!
There's no Messiah in here. There's a mess, all right, but no Messiah.
And now, it's up to Brian to deliver a despairing nation from the throes of oppression. Tough luck, Jerusalem. This is the life of Brian, just when you thought you were saved. It's Monty Python's Life of Brian. He wasn't the Messiah. He was a very naughty boy.
My thoughts on the trailer were, okay, sure. It tells me what I'm going to get in the movie.
It trailered.
Mm-hmm. I am getting to the point where editing the trailers is in my mind the first time I watch the trailer. And so I'm like, oh, I won't need to edit this at all. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I like it. Like the ones where they have like extra vroom vrooms that I'm going to have to figure out which vrooms make it into the cut of our radio show. Looking right at you, Fast and Furious. Yeah. Anyway, this is a fine trailer. I was surprised the aliens made the cut.
That is one of the fun facts I did find that I liked. The only reason that's in there is because they were like, well, he jumps off the thing, what happens? And one of them just said, spaceship? Okay. Like, no discussion at all.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how you, that's a nice way of making comedy. It don't just, think about it too much.
I agree.
Go ahead.
Dog in a bucket is the way that I like to express that. But speaking of which, why did George Harrison's house money have to go towards funding an elaborate space dogfight?
That's true. Yeah, you could have avoided that.
Yeah.
Also, they filmed somewhere exotic, had to set up a production in I want to say Lebanon, somewhere far away.
Okay.
Yeah, this was not a cheap production. Since we brought up J.K. Rowling, I'll just say that this is one better than Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So 70.
Okay. Wow.
I don't dislike it. I don't have any problem with it. You know, I just don't love it the way I thought I might, you know, the way I probably did when I was 13. 70.
23.
That's a different number.
I'm awarding 10 points for the opening credits.
Yep.
2 points for using the name Brian. That was my dad's name. Mm-hmm. I also kind of wondered, I was like, was Brian more of a new name in 1979? Like, my dad was born in 1949, but like, would it be like if we made a movie today called like The Life of Hayden?
Yeah.
Right? And like put it in the past and
certainly
how that's funny.
Not a very British name.
Yeah.
They're all, every one of them's John.
Yeah.
Or Terry or Eric.
And then I'm going to give it a bonus point for showing us Michael Palin's torso. I had no idea how buff he was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, get it, Michael Palin. Anyway, and then, you know, the rest, I enjoyed watching it, sort of, kind of, not really. So I'm going to go with 38.
All right. Yeah, I was the one that liked it. That sleepover viewing clearly resonated. 43 and two-thirds. We're sorry. Camila is here to tear down the icons of 20th century comedy. That's what she does on the show.
Exactly. That's why I'm here. I had to print out a new bingo card, so I don't remember what we had on there, but I think drag.
Certainly.
Yeah. Mine is also not marked for what we have previously.
I forgot mine. What's going on, everybody? Well, if one of you gets a bingo, here, we can figure that. There was barely anything was marked. Right. Let me see one. So that's it. Free space, I have an idea, Dragon Bible.
Okay.
Unless...
Dragon Bible.
Someone must have been killed after a monologue, right?
And this one? I feel like it's... Yeah. Like, this. That's what this...
Mm-hmm.
That was the genre for it. This is the genre for that.
It happens in Holy Grail, but not here. Holy Grail is, I guess Holy Grail is by default the one to see because it's become such a font of cultural references that you kind of have to.
Also, I saw Holy Grail when I was like six. Uh-huh. Six is the right age to see Holy Grail.
Meaning of Life has more commentary. Meaning of Life has more questionable stuff, just assorted bullshit because it is very sketchy, but like... I don't know. Every sperm is sacred is still an excellent argument about the abortion debate. If you've seen it, you know what I mean. Mm. Anyway, sorry, Python heads. We were sure that the recording at the Hollywood Bowl is a comedy master. It's fine. You're fine. I'm sure this isn't the first time someone has told you they don't get it. So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Who's got some stuff they saw and have opinions on?
I watched I'm Not Okay.
How is that?
It's okay. The
only thing I know about that movie is that it warns, like in the warnings, it warns for unlikable protagonists. Which
I
like,
was kind of a little sour on. Like, I don't think we needed to do this.
That feels very, very weird to me. And I assume they did it to make you care that the movie, like for like notoriety or whatever. But like, it didn't make me want to watch it.
I mean, it's an okay film. Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's been like maybe a week since I saw it. So I don't remember. It's not a lot to remember on. I marked it at 3 stars on Letterboxd. So
Somehow I have no idea what this movie is. I just see people watch it on Letterboxd every now and then.
Hulu, I think. It's a Hulu original. And this girl who is trying to impress some boy that she works with lies and says that she's going to Paris. And then while she's on her fake trip to Paris, a tragedy happens in Paris. And so she has to then pretend that she was involved in this tragedy of a terrorist bombing and all that stuff. And then she starts to get famous because of it and all this other jazz and, you know, downward spiral from there.
Oh, Zoe Deutsch. She's someone who, to use the British expression, I can't be arsed to have an opinion on.
I saw Nope.
Oh, good. What'd you think?
Finally. Ooh. For the podcast listener, she shrugged and made a little noise.
It wasn't for me. Like,
interesting.
I don't think it was a bad movie. I feel like, you know, this is where Jordan Peele gets into that filmmaker Mm-hmm. This is like, okay, you have made a film, sir. Mm-hmm. And so now that's what this is. And that's fine. And it's also, but we've got the sci-fi bit that's going along with it too, and aliens. And I'm just like, eh, that's really not my bag already. So
that, pause for 1 second. It is interesting that you're like, this is him being like, I'm making a film. Because to me, I was like, you're making a movie. It's a monster movie.
Really? Because the way that I see it, I think of him as making it a film is because the big open space is like the cinematography is amazing. And like the scenes and the locations and just like how we've got all this, we've got moments of silence and there's like nothing like going on really. And it's, and just like the way people are positioned in the composition.
Oh, so
of
more
it,
like epic. You're saying
no. I just mean more. Like he's a little more. I feel like he's got a little more artsy.
Okay, because I was like contrasting it with like Us, which is like this has deep layered themes about identity and purpose, right, and fate, right, and this. I'm just like, there's a monster.
Well, I feel like this because I don't get the Gordy thing.
It's about respecting animals.
Okay.
That's what I said to Colin. I don't know. To me, like the main thing for me with Nope, and by the way, we've entered spoiler county, everybody.
Yeah. It's been out for a while. It's made a lot of money.
You can rent it on TV. Like you can rent it at home now. So. Yeah.
Time's up.
The thing I love about it is that the movie, the trailer made you think it was going to be about aliens, and it's a monster movie. It's not about aliens. That thing's probably not an alien, right? It's an animal.
If there's social commentary to be had for this movie, it's about celebrity.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And that's what I took away from it. And the monster is beautiful, but it's also like, where did you come up with this? Like, do you have a problem with origami, Jordan? Like, is that, he has some sort of fear of origami, but
I said it looked like a vulva, and Colin was like, I disagree. And I was like, wait a second. Both of us are most familiar with the same vulva.
And it took on several different forms. Yeah. At one point, I thought it looked like an angel.
Allegedly, its final form is a biblically accurate angel. That's the monster angels in Revelations. Right. That's what it's. And so they're trying to, you know, how he always has, you know, some nonfiction textbook in his head that he's written about his movie. that this is. What we're saying is that this thing, which is not an alien, is where we get our myths of aliens and our myths of angels. Mm. This is the source of all of that, this creature thingy. Yeah. What do we call them at the end? It's two words. Lucky something.
Denim. Lucky denim?
Denim jacket.
Denim jacket.
Denim jacket.
Denim jacket. So, yeah, I mean.
I went to the brand of a denim jacket, didn't I? Yes. Lucky brand denim jacket.
It wasn't for me. Like, I enjoyed it as much as I could enjoy it. It left me with a lot of questions, which isn't a bad thing. And everybody's like the acting. Everybody was amazing. Mm. Like you know, and I
Keith David.
Yeah, right. Oh, like Keith out of nowhere. David.
So good.
And but I was just kind of mostly just left with why is this Gordy subplot in here though?
I think it also ties into what you were saying though about like the dark side of Hollywood, the celebrity, right? Like, like
that's the only.
It's just like exploitation, and then also you know they didn't respect this animal as a dangerous thing,
right?
Which is what OJ and Emerald know how to do,
right?
Which is why they can survive their encounter with Denim Jacket,
right? And also they keep the other thing with the celebrity is that they only get involved in this because they're trying to get a picture so they can get famous,
right?
And then like one of the last shots is finally got a picture.
Yeah
But everyone you know every character is somehow you know, eaten up and destroyed by the Hollywood system. Mm. You know, I mean, Jupe is, he's trying to run a theme park and no one will, there's 14 people at this big opening and he's got his old co-star there with their face going.
Right. Really no face, right.
As was Gordy, as was, you know, even Jean Jacket.
It's Jean Jacket.
Even Jean Jacket is now being destroyed because Jupe tried to pull him into show business.
Right.
You know, I think that's why. Now, the one thing I will say about Gordy, and this is one of my only criticisms of Nope, is on one level, the Gordy stuff is more interesting than the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Like, I was waiting for it to come back to that.
Yeah. I mean, you could do a whole movie about that. Mm-hmm. So not only to have that, but to lead with that struck me as like, you know, you can only have one big idea per per film.
Like, save this for them or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan. Us, them, Nope.
And I also saw Orphan vs. Kill, which was great.
Get out.
That was a fun time.
Is it better than the original? Better than the first one?
There's like two different levels for me. Like the first one, that shit is innately creepy for me. Like just it just creeped me out the whole time through. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until this year when I found out that old girl was actually 13 when she played that role. Like she wasn't, I thought she was like an adult then when she played that role because the makeup was just that good at the end of the first one. So the second one, it's like it could have fallen into like some real serious, like, you know, the sequel of a horror movie type trope and all that business. But they come in, they come at you with a twist in the middle of it. And, you know, and I was immediately like, what? And that's where it just took off and got super fun.
So, I'm looking forward to reading the Wikipedia plot summary, which is the nicest thing I can say about a horror movie.
Mm-hmm. I highly suggest it.
Camille is here with controversy. Monty Python is bad, and she enjoyed Orphan 2 more than Nope. That's why we have different opinions, everybody. I liked The Invitation. I guess no one else did.
Really?
Yeah, it's number one. It's on our list now, but most of the reviews were bad. You know, audience score was kind of mixed.
Which one is it?
This is the, I went to a wedding in the English countryside, and it's spooky.
Samara something?
The girl from Game of Thrones.
Samara Weaving is in the movie Like This that you're thinking of, Ready or Not, from several years ago.
Okay.
This is with Natalie Emmanuel from the Fast and the Furious, recent Fast and Furious movies.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Old dude from the Batman, the Gotham show, the Alfred from Gotham, isn't he in that?
Pettyway
or something like that? That old sexy British man?
Maybe. You look it up and tell me.
I don't know who old sexy British man is.
I keep on social media, I keep calling it Downton Stabby because for most of it, it's just she goes to a super posh British estate and meets the Lord and falls in love with him. And it's way late in the movie that it turns into horror. Like that a lot. I tweeted at the director. I was like, is there a version of this movie where it had no little horror throughout and it was completely marketed as a romance until whoops, surprise. Creepy at the end, and she's like, I'm not telling.
Sean Pertwee.
Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is, listen, I'm not telling you it's a classic, but everyone's like, there wasn't enough horror. What was the point? I didn't. And I'm like, can we have fun? Can we just go and have a British escape movie that turns spooky at the end?
You have enjoyed it better had you not known it was going to turn spooky at the end? Like,
well, I would have.
Would not have stayed around for
it. No, I would have, but audiences hate that. That's how you get your F cinema score if the genre changes halfway. For some reason, particularly in theater audiences, if they think it was going to be one thing and then it turned into a different thing, the audiences revolt.
Well, like that J-Lo movie that I thought was going to be Working Girl but was actually an adoption drama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one.
Or speaking of aliens, that Julianne Moore one that looked like a psychological thriller but then
The Forgotten.
Then
which I have never seen.
Aliens started sucking people into space rendered on screen. They would just be like doo-doo-doo, I'm walking down, and then they go foomp and shrink into the sky because aliens took them.
So when that movie came out, my buddies all went to see it. I had to stay home and study. Ugh. And then they all were like, we just saw the funniest movie, and they like would reference it all the time. I want you to forget. And I'm like ever resentful. Here we are 15 years later and I'm like, the fucking Forgotten.
I saw Bodies again. No one surprised. Still like it. And Beast, Idris Elba in Beast. I mean, I gave it like a 6 out of 10 because I think I was cheering for it. But
for the Beast.
Like I said on the last episode, I want that to be good. I want, we got to fight this lion. I want that to be a good movie. Mm. In practice, I was on my phone for a lot of that. Yeah. I mean, when he fights the lion at the end, it's great. And when the lion's on top of the car and they're like, oh, no. But, you know, you got to fill a lot of movie besides that.
Yeah, it seemed like a weak premise. That's why I was just kind of like, he's just running from a lion? There's nothing like supernatural.
That sounds pretty scary to me.
But that's not 2 hours.
You know what was really interesting? The guy at the drive-in, who I talk to a lot and always takes care of, Dependable Drive-In in Pittsburgh. It's a great place. You should go there more often. And he always takes care of us, and he's so nice. He didn't know who Idris Elba was.
How's that now?
What?
He was like, I guess this stars that guy that was on a couple episodes of The Office.
a couple of episodes of The Office.
First of all, I am aware of the effect I have on women is one of the funniest lines in the history of that show.
But I was, you know, I was like, what are you talking about? He's a big star. And then when I tried to be like, he's in, I blanked. Talking about movies. If we had been talking about TV, this is the guy that owns a drive-in and watches movies and doesn't watch TV. And then I was like, what was I supposed to say? Like, he's in the Thors, but you'd have to a non-Marvel person, then you'd have to explain who he is in the Thors. And then I saw an article a couple of days later that was like, why isn't Idris Elba a bigger movie star? And he's not. There's not a lot of hit movies that star Idris Elba, and there's a number of flops.
You know who else that describes, though? Brad Pitt.
Oh, I know. There's like, a lot of people this applies to.
He is a star, regardless of his ability to open a movie.
Yes, he is. That is absolutely true. But no one saw Beast.
Yeah.
I mean, there is some kind of disconnect where Idris Elba is a celebrity,
right,
and he's a huge TV star, but he hasn't found the thing yet for himself in the movies.
I don't think he needs it.
Oh, I think.
No.
I don't think he takes his clothes off enough. Films, personally.
Camila has diagnosed the problem and has prescribed nudity.
You keep playing daddies and like angry drug dealers or whatever.
You need to play a daddy.
you need to play a zaddy.
Speaking of which, apparently one of his daughters tried to get this part and didn't.
And she was pissed.
And she was mad at him.
I think that's awesome. But,
and he did it right. He was like, you're going to audition, and if you're right for it, you'll get the part.
Right.
And she wasn't. And he apparently it was like, you did good, but this was better.
Yeah.
And she was mad. And I'm like, no, you taught her a lesson today.
Yeah.
Good job.
Exactly.
But I did like the one where they climb the big tower and get stuck. That was a good time. This movie is going to fade into obscurity immediately. I think it opened in like 11th. It's called
Beast?
No, Fall.
Oh, okay. Yikes, I mean, I'm defending him and not being a movie star, but good God, Idris. Okay.
No, it wasn't that bad. Fall is the other one. I tweeted, in brackets, think piece about how audiences want simple, direct storytelling, like Prey, Fall, and Beast. And you can tell that they're different because they have one-syllable titles, as opposed to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness or Everything Everywhere All at Once. We just want a simple movie called Fall or Beast. Fall is about these two jagoffs who are like, we're thrill seekers, and so they climb a big radio tower, and then they get stuck up there, and then they have to try to not die.
I read the plot summary. You talked about it on the show already, Sean.
I know, but I hadn't seen it yet. I read the plot summary going, I want to see that. Now I did see that, and I enjoyed it, and I think more people should see Fall. More people should see Fall than should see Beast. Because I'm terrified of heights, I don't get scared in the theater that often. This is a movie where several times out loud I went, because they panned down and showed the ground very far away.
Sure.
Robin, what did you see?
I've mostly been binging Only Murders in the Building. And the reason that I did that was, well, first of all, it's delightful. But yeah. I watched the last two episodes of the recent season, and about halfway through the first one, I was like, so Colin, you know, there are three people with a podcast, and we're three people with a podcast. So I was like, who's who? And he just like immediately was like, well, you're Martin Short.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, and Camila, Selena Gomez, and Sean's the other one. And I'm like, are you just saying that because Sean has gray hair? And he was like, no. And then I watched the show and, oh my God.
Yeah.
And when that stapler poster came out.
And I was like, is and it there true? It is.
Is this accurate?
It's not inaccurate as to where why haven't I Googled this already? Look at stapler large cutout.
And it's just, you know, Selena Gomez is the fashionable one who's a little bit more guarded about her personal life. And Martin Short doesn't understand sarcasm and is always saying, repeat that into the microphone.
And the fact that he's always got like, I account like his theater knowledge to your Oscar.
And also just being the cheesiest son of a bitch alive. Like I just felt very read by Colin.
Right. When he won the first episode, when they first introduced Martin Short and he almost gets hit by a car, he's like, do you not see this coat? And I'm like, oh my God, that's absolutely a Robin line.
Yeah. So
I gotta
anyway,
watch this now.
You should watch it. It's very effervescent.
Yes. That's a good one.
The other movie I want to talk about, I watched this erotic thriller from 1991 called Shattered.
I think I've seen that
it
in
was
1991.
So Like, it was exactly what I wanted it to be. Like, it's got movie amnesia, and, like, it has this plot twist, which is one of the worst, best plot twists I've ever seen, and, like, which has to be justified by them saying that a body was accidentally disposed in a well of formaldehyde.
It's a Wolfgang Petersen, is it?
Yes, he wrote and directed it. Anyway, if that happens to... I know it's leaving Amazon before this episode drops, but if it happens to stumble into another streaming service, stop on it. It's great.
Maybe that's what I need to do. I need to find somebody that's like... or something that alerts me to like new 90s erotic thrillers that are on streaming services right now.
There might be like a Pluto TV channel for it.
There's gotta be, because there have been several times on this past year I was like, you know what I could go for right now? And
I just, it's, what a great genre. I hope it comes back.
Right?
Well, if we're doing our specific predilections, I watched a spaghetti western called Bandidos. It was Mary Beth's like, you know, that was pretty good. And I'm like, 10 out of 10! More!
No notes!
Let's watch the bonus features. I also watched the Werner Herzog Nosferatu, and I'm hook that into my veins.
That's for you.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else?
I don't think so.
Let's draw a movie. Programming note, this will be our final general draw for a little while before we once again hit you with 3 weeks of spooky season, the part of the year that makes Camila and I very happy and Robin slightly nervous.
Makes Robin an avid Wikipedia user.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, or hey, this could be spooky too. Tony could want more from us. No, not spooky. If it had been 8:44 or 8:45, it would have been spooky. That was It and It Chapter 2.
Oh, wow.
But no, it's 8:46, which is It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World.
When Robin was 8, this was her favorite movie.
Really?
Yes.
What is this? What is, why?
It's a big... Camila, we know you don't like the past.
I wasn't there, so what good is it?
This is a caper with a bunch of celebrities?
There's,
I don't know.
So many famous people in this movie.
Is this like a beach blanket bingo type thing?
No, they're all on a treasure hunt.
Mm. It was soft remade as Rat Race about 2000 with Whoopi Goldberg. And
And was also soft remade in the 80s as Midnight Madness, which I talked about on this show when I watched it with my niece Gia. And I was like, why does my niece Gia love this movie? Oh, for the same reasons that 8-year-old Robin loved It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Mm-hmm. Ethel Merman, Buddy Hackett, Sid Caesar,
yeah,
Jonathan Winters.
Wow. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this picture of Sid Caesar, they got him looking like a fucking ghost. This was like, what, a day? Is he? Never mind. Spencer Tracy?
202 minutes, huh? 342?
I'm sorry, what now?
Oh my goodness.
Gotta clear clear an afternoon. Well, that's the question. I see 202 minutes original cut. 192 premiere cut, 161 theatrical cut.
Okay, I was going to say, there's no way that Robin was routinely watching
a
4-hour movie. So,
if you're watching along with the show, because Camila threatened never to speak to us again, and because the most available version of this also happens to be the shortest version, we will be discussing the 161-minute lightning quick. Watch Land Before Time 3 times. 161-minute theatrical cut. I understand this can be as long as 202 minutes. If one of us wants to, I mean, you're familiar with the film.
I mean, listen, I haven't watched it since I was a kid. If I can find the full cut, might as well.
At least Camila and I will be only spending 3 hours of our life.
I am so excited to rewatch this, honestly.
No, I'm excited. I've always been kind of curious about it. Oddly, I loved Rat Race. Is good. Rat Race is a solid,
I don't
funny,
have fond memories of it, but that
early
doesn't...
2000s loaded cast.
Yeah.
I mean, loaded cast for... Do things with Amy Smart and Brecken Meyer still count as being part of a loaded cast 22 years later? But at the time, that was one of the first DVDs I had.
Oh, wow.
It was the time. It was like that and Fellowship of the Ring. Mm. And so I'm watching all the bonus features since it's such a novel concept.
Yeah.
And the bonus features of Rat Race pointed out that Rat Race is the first movie to feature two black Oscar winners.
You're kidding me. What?
Whoopi Goldberg and Cuba Gooding Jr. Acting Oscar winners. Whoopi Goldberg and Cuba Gooding Jr. Wow. both being in Rat Race is the first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like when you were like, Robin, please fact check this for me. Somebody's saying that Training Day is the first movie with a black director to win an Oscar. And I was like, I am going to bury myself in the ground if that is true.
But it got worse. No black director has won an Oscar.
This was the Training Day was the first
movie with a black Oscar winner. Which is also not true. But no black director has won an Oscar.
I mean, Spike Lee has an Oscar. But not for directing. Right.
Yes. There is no best directing Oscar. Anyway, right. Watch Rat Race. Don't. It probably doesn't hold up as well as I would like it to. You know, long gags with Wayne Knight and Mr. Bean probably don't read the same when you're not 16.
But we are about to watch the 1963 version of a long gag with Wayne Knight and Mr. Bean.
Mr. Howell is in this one, right?
Yes.
From Gilligan's Island.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm excited. I mean, I have to clear my schedule, and I'm going on vacation next week, so it's going to be tough. Flying to Florida, this is longer than the flight to Florida. I can't even be like, tell them, can you circle?
Just got one more. We're not in act three yet.
No. Before we get to that.
Oh, that's going to be our oldest movie.
Is it?
Is it? It's like 63.
Yeah.
What would it have been prior? Papillon?
Fiddler on the Roof.
Fiddler on the Roof, yeah. Tony is determined to make Camila enjoy something from before she was born.
Comedy. Some comedy. Some comedy. Before I was born. Because, you know, there's a lot of the dramas that I could get into.
We didn't get into this at all. I missed the letterbox, too, when I went to look at the song. We missed the letterbox. The letterbox was, of course, male frontal nudity in cinema. Someone is cataloging it because
thank you.
Thanks.
You don't get a whole lot of it.
Yeah.
No, Monty Python's Life of Brian went to number one September 26th of 1979. What was the number one song in America?
Was it My Sharona?
Ooh.
It was My Sharona. Wow. How do you know that?
I will tell you how I know that. Because My Sharona was the number one song of the year in 1979.
Correct.
In 1994, Ben Stiller made a movie called Reality Bites. Mm-hmm. They dance and sing to My Sharona at the gas station. Mm-hmm. It's very cute. I remember the third or fourth time I saw Reality Bites, which is a movie I've seen so many times despite not liking it very much.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, that song wasn't really all that old in 1994.
It's
you know,
15 years.
So the game is every year you look up if Reality Bites was made this year, what would they dance to in the
gas station?
So 15 years ago was...
This hurts my feelings already.
2007?
Justin Timberlake.
You're going with the Billboard number one of the year since My Sharona was the number one, which I would never have guessed this since I... feel like My Sharona is an 80s song. If Reality Bites was made today, they would be dancing to Irreplaceable by Beyonce. To the left. To the left.
Number